time for Israel is Real. Two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. Rahel and Sonia focus on life in modern 21st century Israel, telling the stories of ordinary people living in, loving, and in support of an extraordinary land. Israel is Real is a community-supported program featuring interviews with local, national, and international celebrities, personal life stories, and call-ins. Learn a new Hebrew word every week. Israel is Real. Every Friday on 1590 WSMN. Nashua's News and Talk. And now, your hosts, Rahel and Sonia.
Good morning, we're Rahel.
And Sonia.
And this is Israel is Real, the free voice for Israel. Boker Tov, L'Kol HaMa'azinim.
Tzoraim Tovim B'Yisrael.
From WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. And also on WSMNradio.com. We are enjoying your donations, and we do appreciate it. It keeps us on the air. It's thanks to you. So if you are going to make a contribution, please send a check and write it to Absolute Broadcasting and send it to our personal post office box at Israel is Real, P.O.B. 236, Milford, New Hampshire, 03055. That's our personal address at Israel is Real, Post Office Box 236, Milford, New Hampshire, 03055, and write the check to Absolute Broadcasting. You can also visit our website at www.israelisrealnh.com. That's one whole word, israelisrealnewhampshire.com, israelisrealnh.com. And if you want more information or you want to contact us, you can email us at israelisrael1590@gmail.com. Israel is Real, 1590@gmail.com. Boker Tov.
Boker Tov.
Boker Tov, George.
Hey, Boker Tov.
He's learning Hebrew.
You are good.
Every week, a new word. So we're going to start right away with our new Hebrew word, which is this week.
Pitzatza.
Pitzatza.
And what is the meaning
Not
of?
Cha-cha-cha, no.
No.
Pitzatza.
Pitzatza, it's coming from the verb, from the root of the verb patzatz, pei tzadik tzadik, and the meaning is to explode.
Explode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love that word actually, but I don't like what it does.
Yeah, so therefore patzatza can have two meanings. One, that somebody is beautiful, or the real meaning, which is a bomb.
A bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or explosion. And so there is a reason why we'll be talking about that today.
Unfortunately, yes.
Well, it's not pitzatza, like, you know, you're exploding with beauty, but we'll find out soon. Let's hear a little bit of music for a second, or 30.
Dalecha shekol esev esev yesh lo shira meyuchedet mishelo u mishirat haasavim nasa nigun shel roe kama yafe kama yafe v'nae kesheshomim hashira shelahem tov meod lehitpalel b'neihem uvesimcha la'avod et Hashem umishirat ha'asavim mitmale.
And we are Israel is Real, the free voice for Israel. I'm Rachel, and we're
Sonia.
And we are speaking today with a very honorable guest, and we're very honored to have him here today. Iran's nuclear program presents a threat to international stability, yet successive American administrations, Republican and Democrat alike, have misread the intentions and actions of the Iranian regime. So how dangerous is a nuclear Iran? even if it never detonates a weapon, never has a tzatza. What are the guiding principles of the Iranian leadership? To what lengths would the regime go to carry out its agenda? And how far have Iran's leaders already gone to fund the world's most powerful terrorist organizations? And why have American leaders failed to gain the upper hand in relations with Iran during the past 30 years? We are talking about a film that is called Iranium or Iranium. It's a documentary film that exposes the threats posed to the United States and the world by a nuclear Iran, which is going to premiere this week on February 8th at the AMC movie theaters and community centers nationwide. Here in this region, in this area, it will be shown at 7 p.m. on February 8th at the AMC Lowe's Boston Common at 175 Tremont Street as part of the film's nationwide launch. Alex Trayman is a professional journalist, writer, public speaker, and former radio personality who is covering breaking events and analysis in the Middle East. He's worked as a media, marketing, and public relations specialist. He is also the director of this very important and timely film called Iranium. Shalom, Alex.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
We're really, really honored to have you. We really feel special that we were able to speak to you today. I wonder if we could just start out kind of simply telling us why you have chosen, you do journalism and whatnot, and you've become the director of the film. Why have you chosen to pursue this particular subject?
Well, you know, I guess initially I had sat in a couple conferences in Israel that were describing just how dangerous a nuclear Iran would be. And what I discovered at the time was that I really knew very little about the threat. I mean, obviously Iran has been in the news cycle for years already regarding the enrichment of uranium and the exposing of uncovered nuclear sites. But I thought that perhaps the situation was a little bit deeper. I wanted to know how we came to be in the situation where Iran was already a year to 18 months away from nuclear weapons. And so I started to do a little bit of reading, and I read books like The Rise of Nuclear Iran by Dory Gold, and then I read The Persian Night by Amir Tahiri. And what I quickly realized was that this threat is much more sophisticated than just some crazy president in Iran that wanted nuclear weapons, but rather that the Iranian regime had been working on nuclear weapons for close to 30 years, and that there was an ideology behind these weapons that was extraordinarily dangerous and that most Americans didn't know about.
Yeah, that's for sure. And it's certainly coming to light these days. I wonder if you could just sort of delve into that a little bit more. We're talking about the nature and danger of a theocratic leadership or a dictatorship or this particular. We're watching things in the Middle East sort of changing, crumbling, or I don't know what. But let's start with just what is. Can you define the nature of Iran?
What is so dangerous in this particular leadership, dictatorship? In Iran.
Right. Well, most countries that have nuclear weapons don't cause people in neighboring countries or across the world to be nervous about their use. For example, it's kind of a secret of sorts that everybody knows about that Iran has nuclear weapons. I mean, rather that Israel has nuclear weapons. But the Saudis, who are probably the enemies of Israel, don't go to sleep at night worrying that Israel is going to push the button and nuke Saudi Arabia. With regards to Iran, we do have that fear, and the reason is because the statements and actions of the Iranian leaders over the past 30 years have been extraordinarily radical. Since the Islamic Revolution of 1979 and the return of Ayatollah Khomeini to the scene there, the statements that have come out of his mouth have been extraordinarily shocking. And some of the statements that had been canonized in Iran's constitution from the beginning should bring cause of alarm to all Americans. For example, the constitution of Iran references Imam Khomeini's plot against the American conspiracy. Now, the United States, for example, has a constitution and gained its freedom from British imperialism.
Right.
But the American Constitution is not about fighting British imperialism. It's about freedom and liberty for all American citizens. In Iran, the Constitution is not like that. It talks about Sharia being the form of law that is not only right for Iran, but is right for the rest of the world. The Iranian constitution calls for the establishment of a wholly universal government and the downfall of all others. You know, the Iranian constitution calls for the creation of the Revolutionary Guard Corps, whose mission is jihad, and then it quotes a verse from the Quran, which says, strike terror into the hearts of the enemy. It talks about spreading Iran's ideals beyond its borders, and when you look at Iran's actions over the past 30 years, you start to get a sense of how they believe that they should do that. You know, early on in 1979, Muslim students took over the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, and they held 63 Americans hostage for 444 days. They made a mockery of the United States. Eventually, they released the hostages on inauguration day of Ronald Reagan, because Reagan was an uncertain entity, and they thought that perhaps because of his sort of cowboy bravado, that if they did not let the hostages go, that they might face some sort of repercussion. They let him go, but they saw that terror works. And for the next 30 years, they proceeded to use terror as a tool of implementing their policies and trying to manipulate the West, as we saw in Beirut in the early 80s and throughout the Middle East and even in South America throughout the 90s. And even more recently, since the year 2000, they've been involved in many, many terror attacks to achieve their objectives. They worked with just about every terrorist organization in the world, including Hezbollah, Hamas, and even Al-Qaeda. So, you know, you get the sense of what this regime is all about. They give about $1 billion a year to Hezbollah. You know, why are they doing that? And they're using every weapon that they can in order to affect change both in the Middle East and abroad and other places. And nuclear weapons, you know, in the hands of these people is something that should be very disturbing.
To say the least.
I would like to understand why, if this movie, it is so extremely important, how come that it was banned in certain place or even in some countries? Who is behind this and why?
Okay, there's several questions there. I think that, first of all, what is about this movie? As I mentioned before, you know, Iran has been in the news cycle for a long time. You know, most Americans know that Iran has nuclear weapons, and most Americans know that they probably don't want Iran to have nuclear weapons. But because Iran has been in the news cycle for so long, there is this sort of slow boil that's going on in terms of the situation elevating, but the American public can't really feel it. You know, they're already conditioned to know that it's bad, and there's nothing really new about it. And because most Americans don't know, this film, what it does is it sort of sounds an alarm because it is highly emotive. I mean, film is a very emotional tool. You get to see with pictures, you know, what it is that the Iranians are saying with their own words, you know, with sort of rare footage, and also seeing pictures of the damage and destruction that Iran has caused. And that has really sent shockwaves through the people that have viewed the film. And the film itself is a 60-minute primer. We took a very highly sophisticated situation. You know, we could have easily made a 12-hour miniseries on the situation in Iran, but we wanted to boil it down into something that people could sit in front of their TVs for an hour and really digest the entire nature of the situation. That's something that I think hasn't been done before, and that's why the film is so emotionally powerful. Now, as you mentioned, we've encountered some opposition to the film. And the first place we encountered it was in Canada. The film was supposed to be screened in Ottawa, which is the capital of Canada, at the National Library and Archives, the federal building directly across the street from the Canadian Parliament and the Supreme Court. The film was supposed to be screened there as part of a standard rental agreement by an organization called the Freethinking Film Society that frequently shows films in this venue. And the Iranian government, in fact, had caught on to the fact that we were making this movie. And they sent requests to the Canadian government that they cancel the screening at the National Library and Archives. Those threats, those requests were then followed up by threats of protest. Mm-hmm. And eventually, those threats of protest were followed up by two suspicious packages that made their way into the building on the day of the screening. And those packages were found to have harmless white powder in them, but it was enough to draw hazmat emergency vehicles and get the Royal Mounted Police to close the entire National Archive. It was very surprising to us that the Iranian embassy was actually behind the initial request to get the movie canceled, and it showed us that the Iranian government had been paying attention and knew about this film and apparently didn't want it to be shown. Now, the Heritage Minister of Canada, James Moore, immediately responded when he heard what had happened and actually demanded that the National Library and Archives would, in fact, hold the screening. And that screening is now going to take place on Sunday night in Ottawa in the very same venue under whatever security is necessary to make sure that the film can be screened. The Heritage Minister made a very public statement saying that Iran will not determine what movies will or will not be shown in Canada. And in fact, the Canadian government sent a diplomatic cable to Iran to reassert that Canada is a free country and it won't be intimidated.
Wow.
Wonderful. Those are good news.
Are you expecting the need to set up security at other viewings, or just this was one incident?
Well, fortunately or unfortunately, Iran does not have an embassy or consular presence in the United States, so it's highly unlikely that they would send in requests that the film be canceled in the United States. I don't really expect there to be too much opposition to this film in the United States. However, I didn't really expect that that was going to be the case in Ottawa either. So we'll basically see what happens this week as we have our national screening events across the United States.
What about the government representatives and officials? Will they be viewing this film, or have they seen this film, and what kind of reactions might you expect, or have there been?
Well, we did screen the film earlier this week at the Heritage Foundation in Washington, D.C. The film was very well received. A keynote address was given by Richard Perle, who believed that the film was extraordinarily important. There was a screening this week in Philadelphia at the University of Pennsylvania, and the keynote address for the film was given by former head of Central Intelligence James Woolsey. This coming Tuesday, along with the events that are taking place in cities across the United States, is going to be a screening on Capitol Hill. And we hope that Republican and Democratic congressmen alike will be present, as well as many staffers. And as many Americans know and understand, many times it's the staffers themselves that help to dictate and shape policy even more sometimes from their bosses. So we're hoping that the film will get distributed around Capitol Hill and will have an impact on policy moving forward.
Well, we're speaking with Alex Trayman. He's the director of the film that will be viewed this week on February 8th, this week in Boston at AMC Lowe's Boston Common at 175 Tremont Street, as part of a film nationwide launch. Called, the film is called Iranium, or Iranium. How would we pronounce that, by the way?
Yeah, I guess the Hebrew word to describe it is machloket. a disagreement, perhaps, on how to call the film. I'm usually referring to it as Iranium because the people of Iran are the ones that are the most brutally affected by their regime, and we wanted to make sure that the Iranians understand that we really support their cause. We understand what they're going through, and that we're just as disturbed by their regime as they are.
And as far as you mentioned, we have a few minutes before we're going to break again for a station break. But you mentioned the influence that you were hoping that it might affect certain foreign policy. In what ways could you, maybe in about 1 minute, kind of talk about that, and we can come back again and talk about it after the break as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot that we can do as the number one economic and military superpower in the world to assert the Iranians that we find them having nuclear weapons unacceptable. I mean, right now there's already sanctions legislation that has been passed by the Congress almost unanimously, but there's much that we need to do in terms of enforcing those sanctions, and we need to convince the Congress to do that, and not only to enforce the sanctions that already exist, but in fact to increase the levels of sanctions. Right now, sanctions, you know, are making a dent, but it's essentially a poke in the eye of the Iranian regime, and even though it's a repeated poke and it's very annoying, and it is felt in the streets of Iran, it's not enough to get this Iranian regime to crumble. So there's a lot more that we can be doing in terms of sanctions, and there's also more that we can be doing in terms of supporting Iranian dissidents who are willing, in a sense, to overthrow their government, as we saw in June 2009, similar to the way Egyptians have taken to the streets and Tunisians have taken to the streets to overthrow their government.
Right, and yet these regimes still exist and seem to be quite powerful. In spite of the uprisings, they still have a hold over the people, which is unfortunate. We're going to cut to a break, and we're speaking again with Alex Trayman, director of the film Iranium, and we'll be back with Israel is Real, WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. This is WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk, where Israel is real. And we'd like to have a word from our sponsors, the patent and trademark law firm of Vern Main and Associates, a local firm with a global practice, is pleased to announce its new office location at 547 Amherst Street in Nashua, and also on the web at www.vernmain.com. For professional legal counseling on all intellectual property matters, contact the legal specialists at Vern Main & Associates at their offices on 547 Amherst Street, that's 547 Amherst Street in Nashua, New Hampshire, or on the web at vernmain.com, that's vernmaine.com, vernmain.com.
Vision. Did you know that Vision is an organization that educates our community about the little country of Israel? Did you know Israel is approximately about the size of New Jersey? Did you know who said, who can change the rights of the Jews in Palestine? Good Lord, historically, it is really your country.
Who said that?
Yosef Daya El-Khalidi, which was the mayor of Jerusalem in 1899. Mm-hmm. To receive Vision's emails alert and be informed about the Vision's educational activities and opportunities, please visit Vision website at www.newhampshireforisrael.org. That's www.nhnewhampshire4israel.org.
We'd like to remind you to help Israel reforest and replant trees after the great fire in the Carmel region. And in order to do that, you can visit www.jnf.org. That's Jewish National Fund.org, the organization, jnf.org.
Okay, did you know that Rachel is spreading beautiful music across the globe? To hear Rachel's unique sound and to book Rachel to perform for your live, go to www.rachelmusic.net, which is www.rachelmusic.net.
And we'd like to remind you that this week on February 8th at the AMC movie theaters and community centers nationwide, there will be the premiere screening of an important movie, Iranium, which is a documentary film that exposes the threats posed to the United States and the world by a nuclear Iran. And we will be back in just a second to speak to the movie's director, Alex Trayman.
Mm-hmm.
This is Israel is Real with Rachel
and Sonia
on WSMN 1590 Nashua's News and Talk. We are speaking with Alex Trayman, who is director of the very important documentary film called Iranium, which will be shown this week, February 8th at 7 p.m. at AMC Lowe's Boston Common at 175 Tremont Street. Alex, shalom again.
Shalom to you. Thanks so much.
We are continuing our conversation, and I think, Sonia, you wanted to ask a question.
Yes, I am wondering, what do you expect viewers to come away with after seeing the movie?
Well, I think that most viewers already believe that they don't want Iran to have nuclear weapons. What I want Americans and Canadians and Israelis to watch this film to come away with is the idea that Iranians must completely not, own 100% not acquire nuclear weapons, and that we should do everything in our power to make certain that that eventuality does not occur. And quite frankly, I think that that eventuality is already very close at hand. And I think that it's a very big difference in terms of psyche to get from the place of, I don't want them to have nuclear weapons, to, we must do everything in our power to stop them.
I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the actors who and the Confederation of Iranian Students. I can't pronounce their names properly. Siavash Tarotipi and Sartipi and Paria Ahangar. You'll have to tell me how to say it. And Ahangari, and also the actress who will be narrating, who narrates the film.
Right, well, the students, I haven't actually met them as of yet, but I can tell you that the Confederation of Iranian Students, which are led by Amir Fakhrovar, who's in the film, are an important group in terms of spreading awareness from the perspective of Iranians that seek liberties that currently don't exist in Iran. And Shora Agdashlu, who's the narrator of the film, and the people might remember her from her role as the older sister in the stoning of Soraya M. That was a film that touched me deeply, by the way.
The stoning of Soraya. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a very important film, and I think that people should watch it. But Shore also is very established just in the American scene as well. She was nominated for an Academy Award in the film The House of Sand and Fog, where she played opposite Ben Kingsley. And she's been nominated. She actually won an Emmy for some works that she did on television. She just appeared recently in an episode of Law and Order. More important than that, Shora is very dedicated to the cause of her Iranian compatriots. She fled Iran shortly after the revolution, and I've had the opportunity to speak with her on many occasions, and she's just so passionate about wanting to see a different Iran. I mean, obviously, because of her roles in these films and being so outspoken on human rights as she has been, she can't go to Iran herself, and even though she does have family there, but she looks forward to the day, she told me, when she can return, and she has a feeling that that day will happen, you know, in the next couple of years.
God willing.
How students from political science with their professors can get this movie, and how they can change the view about Iran, and, you know, after all, those are the diplomats from tomorrow.
Absolutely. In terms of getting to see the movie, as we mentioned already, there are going to be screenings across the United States. The movie's easy to get, even if you can't get to one of those screenings. It's going to be on video on demand on Comcast across the country. The video is going to be highlighted as a top documentary on Hulu for people that are checking out that channel. But also, we're making the film available for free online viewing at our website this coming Tuesday.
Can you mention the website?
Yeah, absolutely. It's www.iraniumthemovie.com. That's iraniumthemovie.com. So the movie's going to be available for free viewing. Because we're not for profit, we feel that the most important thing is to get the movie seen, to get people educated about the nature of the threat. And we're hoping to have hundreds of thousands of people viewing the film on February 8th, and that should be the launch date for getting many more people to view it, as we hope that individuals across the country will see the film in large numbers, you know, over the coming weeks and months. In terms of the college campus, I mean, that's obviously a number one battleground for the minds and thoughts of upcoming leaders. And unfortunately, and this is very disturbing to many Americans when they learn this, but the Iranians, the Saudis, have identified this this battleground long before we even identified it. And they're actually investing millions of dollars each year in trying to seat pro-Islamic professors at many of the major universities across the United States. And a lot of times we're seeing these professors orchestrate and then join students in protest against Israel, against freedom and democracy. And so obviously this is a very, very difficult situation that our students are in. You know, our students are learning to hate that which is true and good before they even get to positions where they can affect change. And so obviously the college campus is a place where we hope that this movie will be seen. And we hope that an honest and intellectual debate about the Iranian regime can take place. You know, let's have people watch the film and then let's raise the discussion.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's so important on the campuses. I don't think people realize how much money is pouring into the campuses from abroad and really influencing what our students are learning. I wonder, in light of today's events, you know, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been trying to warn the free world for years about the dangers of Iran, and people haven't been listening. And now we're seeing actually the outcome and the results of this power. I wonder if you could comment a little bit on the situation today. We realize that there, or maybe people don't, I don't know, but there's a power struggle going on many levels. And I would say one between modern and traditionalist Arab mindset or Muslim mindset, the power struggle between the traditional, say, the Muslim Brotherhood, for example, the modern, the secular world in the Arab world, the Arab nations, and the Western mindset, the desire for democracy, perhaps, and the power struggle over who was really controlling the region. I don't know if you can comment on this at all.
Well, I think you just raised the topic for, you know, maybe a 3-day conference. To sort of get at it very briefly, Iran is very clearly trying to and succeeding in establishing itself as the regional superpower. And nuclear weapons only seek to increase Iran's position in the region. Now, we know that there have been other poles of influence in the Middle East, such as Saudi Arabia, which kind of plays the dual role of being, on the one hand, very radical, on the other hand, more moderate, especially with regards to dealing with Israel. I mean, it's a school of debate about Saudi Arabia itself. In Egypt, even though there are a lot of radical undercurrents, Hosni Mubarak has, for the most part, been a sort of stable dictator. Now, he's clearly a tyrant and a dictator towards his own people, but with regards to, you know, maintaining quiet along the Israeli border, you know, he's done a moderate job. He certainly has not had, you know, he certainly is not telling his people to flood the border, and he's certainly not using his military might to attack Israel, you know, since the peace treaties were signed. That said, Iran has sort of taken this anti-Israel approach, which is not inherently Iranian to begin with, in order to win popularity on the Arab street. Now, Iran is not an Arab country. It's a Persian country. They understand sort of regional geopolitics, and in order to wield additional influence and gain popularity amongst neighboring countries, they've sort of taken this anti-American, anti-Israel position to the next level. And now I think with all the turmoil that's going on in other Arab countries in the Middle East, such as in Egypt, and similar undercurrents are taking place in Jordan and Syria, as you see those countries sort of have a diminished role, even if their power drops a little bit, it creates a vacuum. And that vacuum is waiting to be filled by Iran. Iran wants to be the number one dominant superpower in the Middle East. Furthermore, as I mentioned, Iran, which is mostly Shiite, and these other countries, which are mostly Sunni, they have a sort of love-hate relationship with each other. But when it comes to common causes, such as anti-Americanism and anti-Israel activities, they have found themselves uniting more often than not. And I'm very worried that Iran will rise in terms of prominence in the region, and these other countries, including Egypt and Syria, and potentially even Jordan, will simply fall in line and add additional strength to Iran's rank.
And then where does Saudi Arabia play into this?
Well, Saudi Arabia is still the other pole, and there's this sort of Sunni, Shiite tug of war that's going on. It's hard to see how it's all going to play out, but Iran is clearly establishing itself as a much more dominant player, and it looks like that they are winning more of the Arab street than Saudi Arabia is. And so I believe that if you see countries like Egypt and Jordan and Syria working more closely with Iran than they had in the past, that means a more diminished role for Saudi Arabia.
And I wanted to comment to, excuse me, that we see there is as I hear commentary on the radio and I'm listening, you know, seems to be a movement to turn things around on its head, and the status quo, that, you know, to put a blame on America, Israel, even leaders like Mubarak, that they are the cause and the reason for the uprising and the situation today. I don't know if that's exactly true, but how do you sort of rate that?
Well, I would say that everybody is culpable for what's going on. I mean, certainly President Mubarak is culpable for allowing the seeds of political Islam and radicalism to brew under his watch inside Egypt. I mean, he is a brutal tyrant in the sense that that Egyptians are not benefiting from all the money that pour into that country. And, you know, you see Egyptians that are living on less than $2 a day, and it causes anger, and it causes extreme ideology to develop. And the Jews have obviously been an easy scapegoat, you know, throughout history, as we've known, and why not? You know, I mean, we know the reasons, but inside of Egypt, it's just very easy to blame all the problems on the Jews and on America. But America has been guilty, and that's the truth as well. I mean, our policies towards the Middle East have always been two-sided. Even in this recent uprising, at first we were supporting the rights of the protesters to be in the streets, and then the next moment we were talking about a smooth and orderly transition, which seemed to be a message more closely supporting that of President Mubarak. And I think that both sides of the argument feel that America is not supporting them. And that is a dangerous situation. You know, we, as the United States of America, we have to decide, you know, what are our priorities, and to support the side which we think will, in fact, be better for us in the short term as well as in the long term. I'm very worried that we have a very short-term mentality towards what's going on. I mean, this is sort of ABB mentality, which says, how do we fix this right now? What's going to be good for us today? But as we saw in Iraq, establishing democracy, it takes a long time. We're 8 years into war, and we're not there yet. In Egypt, we have a chance to establish democracy without lifting, you know, our military's arm even one bit. However, we have to understand that it's going to take actually a long time in order to establish that. The one thing that's most disturbing to me with regard to the situation, should be most disturbing to the Israelis as well, you know, to Israel, is that the peace treaty that was signed between Egypt and Israel, which has established quiet for close to, you know, over 30 years already, has given Israel tons of support in terms of money and weapons arsenal, but it's given the same to Egypt. And who did the Americans think that Egypt might use those weapons against when they were giving them to Egypt to begin with? In fact, they were giving arms and money to both sides of the conflict, and that is a behavior pattern that has been established throughout the Middle East, and we see it today with Israel and the Palestinians at the same time as Israel is getting weapons from the United States. The United States is also giving money and arms to Palestinians in the disputed Israeli territories. So it's very difficult to understand how people would think that America is not even partly to blame when, in fact, they are arming and funding the enemies of Israel and the United States.
It's very dangerous. Clearly, policy change needs to be enacted in, you know, all around, and there's a lot to think about. Let's get back to the movie. I just wanted to say that clearly, you know, the situation on the ground today is possibly some kind of a distraction away from Iran. So we want to keep the focus on Iran, and which is what I believe your movie is about. Sonny, you were...
I was trying to figure out how somebody can get involved and can influence. You know, I'm speaking about the entire world. How can we influence our leaders in order to listen what the Iranian regime have to say? And, you know, how can we make our leaders to protect us?
Well, the first thing that we have to do, is, as I mentioned before, is get the American public to really recognize the true nature of the threat. If the only way that congressmen will seek to increase the level of sanctions or other activities that might be taken against the Iranian regime is for these congressmen and senators to feel that Americans care. You know, Americans have got to come to the conclusion that the statements of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, that the development of a completely illegal nuclear program and the sponsorship of terror that Iran has supported and financed for the past 30 years actually puts a target on the back of 300 million Americans. If Americans will wake up in the morning and say, I believe that Iran poses a very real existential threat to me, my family, and the people of my city, not to mention the Jews in Israel and additionally Muslims, whether they be in Saudi Arabia or in the United Arab Emirates or Bahrain or wherever they may be. Once Americans say, this is a real threat and I feel this threat and I don't want this threat beating down my back, then congressmen might wake up and say, hey, you know, the American people have spoken and we need to do something about this. So we need to very much consider the fact that we've got to wake up. And the best way to do that is by getting as many Americans to watch the film as possible. You know, we're hoping that tens of thousands, if not many more, will watch this film and that it will sort of spread virally throughout the United States. And the best thing that Americans can do to make this viral spread occur is to host screenings of the film in their communities, be it in synagogues and churches and community centers, in schools and college campuses, you know, even in your homes. You know, invite 20 of your friends over and say, hey, you've got to see this movie. This is a very important movie. You know, break out the popcorn and watch the film. And then you can come to our website after, and you can write letters to your congressman through our site. You can sign a pledge which states that you are completely 100% against Iran crossing the nuclear threshold. And then you can find information about great organizations that are actually taking the lead in terms of trying to prevent Iran from going nuclear, whether it means divesting from companies that continue to do business with Iran, or supporting additional sanctions legislation, or supporting dissident efforts to try to free Iran from brutal patterns.
Wonderful. I wonder, besides actually going to a theater and seeing the film, will it become available then on a disc, for example, on a CD?
The film is available for sale on DVD on our website, also on Amazon. But you can watch the film, again, as I mentioned, on Comcast, Video On Demand. And on this coming February 8th, you'll be able to watch the movie for free on our website, which is iraniumthemovie.com. That's iraniumthemovie.com.
And we're speaking to Alex Trayman. He's the director of the film Iranium, which is a documentary film that exposes the threats posed to the United States and the world by nuclear Iran. We want to keep the focus on Iran. That is the foundation and the core of essentially what's going on worldwide these days. So, Alex, we really have been honored to have you as a guest. Can you share some last words, some final words before we have to close our show?
Well, first of all, thank you guys so much for having me. And I think that the real reason why people need to watch the movie is because having me tell you how dangerous Iran is, you know, it's powerful, but it's not as powerful as seeing it with your own eyes. Seeing Ahmadinejad calling to wipe Israel off the map and calling for the satanic and demonic rule of America to be obliterated, when you see him saying that with his own words, when you see the damage that these terrorist attacks have caused, and when you see with your own eyes how Iran has been building an illegal nuclear program for the past 20-plus years, you really can digest a little bit better the nature of the threat.
Definitely. Alex Trayman, director of Iranium, the movie, which will be shown February 8th, that's this week at 7 p.m. at the AMC Lowe's Boston Common at 175 Tremont Street and all around the nation. So please go to the website www.iraniumthemovie.com. That's iraniumthemovie.com, and find out where you can see it and where you can take part and show it to your communities. Alex, it's been wonderful. We are truly honored. And thank you, and we wish you much success. And we will be also viewing the movie, you can be sure, and spreading the word. So thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, and Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom, Alex Trayman. And we turn now to our Torah portion of the week. Sonia, that is, I believe, Pekudei?
Yes, it is Parashat Pekudei. The Torah tell us this week how Moses, Moshe Rabbeinu, set up the Mishkan, the Holy Tabernacle. At the conclusion of the account of setting up the Mishkan, the Torah tell us how the Shekhinah, the God's Holy Spirit, filled the Mishkan. The Torah tell us that the Shekhinah dwelt on the Mishkan, the Holy Tabernacle of Bnei Israel, the children of Israel, through their journeys. Because we know that the lessons of the Torah are eternal, we can learn an inspirational lesson from this verse, namely, that wherever the Bnei Israel, the children of Israel, will travel in exile, the Holy Shekhinah will escort them, as it hinted in the verse, through their journey. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. And we are Israel, Israel. We are the voice, the free voice for Israel. I'm Rachel and
Sonia.
We'd like to remind you again, we've been speaking this week with Alex Trayman. He's the director of the film Iranium. That's Iranium, a documentary film that is going to expose the threats posed to the United States and the entire world by a nuclear Iran, which is premiering this week, February 8th, at the AMC movie theaters and community centers nationwide. If you're in the Boston area, you'll want to see it on February 8th at 7 p.m. at AMC Lowe's Boston Common on 175 Tremont Street. And please do go see it. And if you can't see it, you'll go online, iraniumthemovie.com, to see it in your home, to purchase a disc, and to bring it to your communities. Again, Where Israel Is Real, Rachel and Sonia. Our theme song is Hine Matov by myself, Rachel. RachelMusic.com. We're on the air every Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. on WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk, and on the internet at WSMNRadio.com. Again, we thank our guest, Alex Trayman. Israel Is Real.
Shabbat Shalom.
Meluna v'shalechet kerem gefenim lonim tel chorban echreshet tchoho leilot vileil tanim mash evano keshet hoy hoy eretz emdat lev ashamir ashayit bayir sud yatom bagev bashamayim ayit reach pardese aviv שיר צלצל גמלת בים של אור טובע הכל
ועל פני כל התכלת אך פרדסי אביב שיר צלצל גמלת בים של אור טובע הכל ועל פני כל התכלת